What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions, everybody. How you doing? I'm Charlie Robinson. If you want to connect with the show, you can reach out to us through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, and also you'll find my social media links in the description. Feel free to connect with me there or follow the show on Twitter for as long as they allow that to happen, or yell at me on Facebook. I'm used to that. And let's make this a little bit more interactive, shall we? And of course, as usual, if you like this show or if you like the shows that you've listened to in this series, please share them with people, because certainly can't leave it up to the people running the social media platforms to do that. They have no interest in this information getting out. In fact, they're actively working to suppress it. So kind of need everybody's help, if you don't mind. And that kind of it is a nice segue into what we're going to talk about today, which is propaganda. And, you know, propaganda is, as an American, you think of propaganda in the image that comes in your mind is Russia, you know, like from the 80s, you know, Gorbachev and breadlines and all this propaganda and Pravda and, you know, them lying to their people. And we would sit in the United States and just look at them and go, those poor bastards, they don't even know that their government is so full of shit. It's just constantly lying to them. And they're here, look at them. Look how blissfully ignorant they are. Well, I have news for everybody. I think we probably are aware of this. There's a lot of propaganda being used against us. And if we think we're the only ones that are, you know, if we think that Russia's the only one that got a heavy dose of propaganda, or maybe all these shithole countries, as Trump likes to call them, well, we better reevaluate things, because nobody's getting propagandized to more right now, I would say, than, well, maybe the Chinese first, but the United States is not far behind. But what's more devious about it is that we have the belief that what we're getting is actually the truth and that everybody else is getting the lies. And we sort of look at them with a little bit of, like, you know, sadness and contempt, like, you know, those suckers, they don't even know. Well, it's us too. You know, we're wrapped up in this. And you know, from time to time, you'll hear people in a position to know talk about this. You've got a guy like Richard Stengel, who's a reprehensible lizard person, in my opinion. He was the head of he jokingly said that his title was chief propagandist of the Obama administration, and he worked in the Obama White House. he joked about that. But what his real job was, he was the editor-in-chief of Time magazine. And you can find clips of him in at a discussion for the Council on Foreign Relations panel discussion where he's up on stage. There's three other people next to him and he's sitting in a chair and he's taking questions from the audience. And he says, I don't have a problem with propaganda. I think propaganda is good. I think it's useful. I mean, a lot of countries use it and I don't necessarily have a problem with it. Well, I have a problem with it. I have a problem with the editor-in-chief of Time magazine not having a problem with it because, you know, you're selling this magazine with the implied guarantee that it is full of the truth to the best of your knowledge and that it's – I mean, why have fact checkers? Why have editors? If propaganda's – if the editor-in-chief says propaganda's okay, then why would you even bother to fact check anything? I mean, what's the point then? If the guy at the top who signs off on it says that he's in favor of lying to the people, then why do you have an editor? Why do you have somebody that's going to take a look at it? Oh, you got to change that. We can't put that in there. If we put that in there, we'll get sued. Well, what difference does it make? Your editor-in-chief says that go ahead and lie. It's fine. He finds it useful. It's useful to control people. Of course, when there was a follow-up question from the audience, he said, thanks for coming out, everybody, and turned off his microphone, handed it, and waved and walked off stage. So, you know, he's a chicken shit, of course, on top of being a propagandist. But this is not to be, this is not some surprise or anything. This is what you get. By the way, Richard Stengel's on the board of directors or the advisory board of NewsGuard. And NewsGuard is an organization that wants to tell you whether the news that you're getting, whether the information that you're getting is either trusted, somewhat trusted, or not to be trusted at all. So the guy who's the chief propagandist is also on the advisory board of the company who's going to tell you whether your news is real or fake. Yeah, great. So you've got the guy from the Obama administration who's the chief propagandist. And then what you get later in towards the tail end of, well, the second half, I should say, of Obama's presidency is you get the legalization of propaganda, like in actual terms. You get the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012. And that's something that most people don't really hear much about, doesn't necessarily roll off the tongue. But what it was is it legalized propaganda inside the United States. That is a simple definition of it. The original Smith-Mundt Act made propaganda illegal in the United States, and it was in place. It was not set to expire. There was no reason for Obama, the Obama administration, to go in there and change it, but they did. In 2012, they crammed it into the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, that was passed in 2013. And so what the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012 did was it legalized a certain amount of hours per month that the government could use to conduct psychological operations to influence the United States public. It legalized propaganda. Now, I think a very good case can be made that they've been lying and using propaganda for many, many decades before that. So it's not as if propaganda didn't exist before 2012. But it's now legal. So think about that. Think about from that point forward what you got. You got a lot of school shootings and mass shootings, and you got a lot of questionable events that happened. Boston bombing. You had things that were not exactly as they appeared. And I mean, you have that sort of anyway. But if you look back through the lens of now knowing that propaganda was legalized from that point moving forward, then you have to question some of these events. You have to question the commentary surrounding them as well. I mean, there's no good way to explain why a president sought to legalize lying to the public. And also let's remember that they don't make laws to go unused. You know, if they're going to do something like the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, which legalized propaganda, you better bet your ass that there's about to be some propaganda coming your way. Okay, they didn't pass that just to have it sit there and do nothing and collect dust. They intend to use it, and they have been using it. So when you talk about things like coronavirus event, how much of that is propaganda? I mean, it's legal. There's no repercussions for anybody using it. So it has to be considered. You know, it has to be considered in everything. Vegas shooting? Maybe, you know. What part of that is real and what part of that is propaganda? Who's to say it has to all be propaganda? It could be mixed in there. It could be a 75% truth, 25% propaganda, you know. It doesn't matter, though, because it's legal. And so, you know, so this is the world we're living in. This is the world we're now operating in inside the United States. I can't speak for the rest of the world. Some countries have it better. Some countries have it worse, obviously. But you just need to you need to come from a point of understanding that the United States thought there had to have been a meeting in which they said, you know what's really holding us back? It's this Smith-Mundt Act that they have where we can't propagandize the American people. If only there was, if only we could get rid of that. And then some guy's like, hey, I have an idea. Why don't we change it? Why don't we change it so that you can legal it? And they're like, yeah. And then we'll take it to Obama and we'll have him sign off. Oh, that's a great idea. I mean, that sounds nuts, right? But that's what happened. I mean, that's what I'm speculating happened. I mean, they've got passed. So for all I know, maybe Obama said, hey, you guys go figure out how to make it legal for me to lie to everybody. So I know everybody, you know, a lot of people want to give Obama a big hug and, you know, and to, oh, he's so dignified and everything. But that, stop doing that. Okay. That guy's a reprehensible scumbag in his own right. He just looked better doing it than everybody else. He just had a way that made him seem like more genuine than Trump or W, you know? But that might even be more dangerous, is the fact that he looks good doing it, you know? Philip K. Dick, the author who wrote Minority Report and Blade Runner and AI and a bunch of other things, he had a good quote. The basic tool for the manipulation of reality is the manipulation of words. If you can control the meaning of words, you can control the people who must use the words. You know, this is welcome to America, the new home of propaganda, where we're forced to use new words and there's other words that we can't use. Like, I'm not allowed to say retarded, and I have a problem with that. I think it's retarded that I can't say retarded. You know, it just this there's going to be a new, what am I going to call, mentally challenged? First of all, I would never call a retarded person retarded. That would be unbelievably cruel and horrible to do. But I'm going to call someone on Twitter retarded. You better take that to the bank. The bigger the lie, the more it will be believed. Joseph Goebbels, Nazi minister of propaganda. I mean, he wrote the book on it, right? Maybe literally he wrote the book on it. Actually, Edward Bernays wrote the book on it called Propaganda. But these ideas of how to control the masses through stories, fake events, outright lies, you know, mostly truths wrapped with a little bit of lies. I mean, this gets into... there's a science behind this. You know, there's a science behind propaganda. There's a science behind lying to people. And one place that worked to incorporate the science into the media, sort of a blending of science with media in order to science plus media equals culture, is maybe the formula I would give for it. And that's the Tavistock Institute. And the Tavistock Institute, Tavistock, by the way, is not a music festival. hey, bro, you going to Tavistock this year? Not the same thing. Okay. That's something else. That's Glastonbury or Woodstock or something. If you go to the Tavistock Festival, you're going to get your head, you're going to get filled with a bunch of acid and they're going to go Clockwork Orange on you. Okay. You don't want to do that. From the book, Thanks for the Memories by Bryce Taylor. Here's a quote. The Tavistock Institute of Human Relations was set up in London in 1921 to study the breaking point of humans. Kurt Lewin, a German psychologist, became the director of the Tavistock Institute in 1932. About the same time, Nazi Germany was increasing its research into neuropsychology, parapsychology, and multi-generational occultism. Interestingly, a progressive exchange of scientific ideas was taking place between England and Germany, most notably in the field of eugenics. The movement devoted to improving the human species through the control of hereditary factors in mating. I'm not going to get into eugenics in this because I'm going to do a whole episode on it because there's a lot to it. But the Tavistock Institute is the culture factory of the world. They're the ones that put out the, they're the ones that created the Beatles. They're the ones that created, you know, a lot of the hippie culture. They get in there and they start to create trends and fads and they push them out through the channels in the mainstream media. A lot of people tied to Tavistock Institute are some pretty sketchy individuals. Dr. Alexander King comes to mind. He was a high-ranking guy at the Tavistock Institute. He was a co-founder of the Committee of 300. He was a co-founder of NATO. He was a co-founder of the Club of Rome with David Rockefeller. So that's a guy you want to stay away from. And he had a very high-ranking position in the Tavistock Institute. So what you're dealing with are a bunch of these, you know, I guess maybe Illuminati is a name you could throw around. High-ranking government people, maybe even higher than government, involved in this. It's social engineering. Social engineering, social control, creating structures, using propaganda to influence the herd, using science and scientific procedures to influence the herd, and using pop culture, creating pop culture, creating music culture. You know, that you know, heck, I hate to do this to people that are huge Beatles fans. I'm a Beatles fan myself, but God, go listen to some of Mike Williams, Sage of Quay's stuff on the Paul is Dead rabbit hole, and it'll screw you up for liking the Beatles. But anyway, you remember the black and white footage of the Beatles landing at LaGuardia in New York and getting off the airplane and all the screaming girls and everything? It just, for the record, all of those screaming people were paid to be there. Just so you know, wasn't as organic of an event as you might think. But the Tavistock Institute was deeply behind that. They were deeply behind the rise of the Beatles. The Beatles have a lot of question marks behind them. I love their music. I will say that again. I love Paul McCartney's solo stuff, even if it isn't really Paul McCartney. But and I love John Lennon's stuff. And I think that, you know, whatever, there's a lot there. But and I'm going to have Mark Devlin on the show at some point and to get into the background of these music guys. He's agreed to do it as soon as he has a break in his schedule, and we'll get into that, and Tavistock will come back into play in that conversation. But so let me read I'm going to read a quote from a guy named Jim Keith, who wrote a book called Mass Control: Engineering Human Consciousness. And he said, one prominent locus of world control, its influence spreading through the media, the scientific establishment, corporations, governments, and the military, is the Tavistock Institute. Tavistock, a collaborative effort of British military intelligence and the psychiatric establishment, was created in 1921, reportedly on orders of members of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, also known as Chatham House. The RIIA is an arm of the British Rhodes Roundtable Group, founded by British imperialist and Freemason Cecil Rhodes. The Roundtable, functioning through a myriad of offshoots, has been this century's most effective proponent for the creation of a one-world government. Tavistock relies on grants for its operation from the Rockefellers, Carnegies, the British Home Office, and large anonymous grants. So, just so you know a little bit of the background of what Tavistock is and who they owe allegiance to. They are, you remember the 77 bus, the 77 tube station and the bus blowing up? Well, the bus, the double-decker bus that blew up right in front of the Tavistock Institute. So, and I'm going to tell you right now, even though I have zero evidence to back this up, I guarantee you the people at the high levels in the Tavistock Institute knew that was coming. And it was chosen to happen right there for a very specific reason, to send a coded message to those in the know that, hey, you know, we're behind this psychological operation. Can't prove it. Just throwing it out there. So don't beat me up if I'm wrong on that, but I think I'm right. But this is, we talk about the tentacles of control, and the media control tentacle plays a huge part in shaping public opinion, shaping reality, frankly. And Tavistock is a big part. It's plugged into the media. You know, they're located, it's located in London. It has ties to the BBC. They work together. They complement one another in this sense that Tavistock sends out the message, BBC picks it up and repeats it and spreads it all out. It's a shame too, because, you know, I'm way into all of the British music, you know, like if you have Sirius XM satellite radio and you get First Wave, love it. It's all that like British new wave stuff from the 80s. It's phenomenal, but there's a lot, unfortunately, a lot of fingerprints of Tavistock in the music of that era. In fact, you want to know, there's kind of an interesting thing. You know who Sid Vicious and Johnny Rotten were from the Sex Pistols? Well, Johnny Rotten, lead singer, the one who's alive. You can find a clip from him, and I think it was 1979. It might have been 79 or 77, but I think it was 79. Where he's doing an interview, and they ask him about something having to do with Top of the Pops, or you know, that show. And he makes a comment about Jimmy Savile back then in 79. He goes, oh, you can't talk about that now, can you? You know, talking about, oh yeah, that guy's a scumbag. I want nothing to do with him. Oh, but we are not allowed to talk about that. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? Something along those lines. You find that interview, you'll see that, you know, it's no coincidence that Jimmy Savile was a high-ranking person at the BBC. He was protected by them. If you know the background of him and his rampant pedophilia, necrophilia, which is awesome, sarcasm font, his involvement with the royal family, the fact that he was brought in to help counsel the dissolving relationship between Prince Charles and Diana. That's fucking bonkers to me that he was brought in. Like, could you pick was Satan not available to help mediate that argument? I mean, Jesus Christ, you're going to bring Jimmy Savile in? Whatever. But so just so that we're all understanding how this works, propaganda, Tavistock, mainstream media, all these things go together. They need the mainstream media to amplify the message and make it mainstream. And they do that very well. They do that without question because they're controlled. So that's what that's part of how this system works. The social engineers create the scenario that they want, the culture that they want. You know, like the hippie 60s movement in San Francisco and the Haight-Ashbury stuff and the, you know, Tune In, Dropout, you know, Timothy Leary, all that. I mean, I hate to spoil it if people think that that was an organic event, that it was not. Timothy Leary was a CIA asset that's well known, declassified. It's not even up for debate anymore. And that whole flower power movement was socially engineered. It's not to say that there wasn't great music coming out through there, because there was, but you can hear Bob Weir talking and on a crazy message that my friend Jimmy Jeans, who has his own radio show, sent me one day, this message of Bob Weir talking to someone they're getting interviewed about a concert that the Grateful Dead did, but didn't do. It officially didn't happen, but it was broadcast out direct into people's heads, and Bob Weir wasn't supposed to talk about it. It's a crazy interview. I got to find it. Or if you people want to look it up, you can. I don't know what sort of search parameters you'd use, but I saw it. I saw the video, and it's crazy because he's like, oh, we're not supposed to talk about that, but it happened, you know. So the Grateful Dead was tied to the CIA as well. I know that sucks. That sucks to hear. I've been to a bunch of Grateful Dead shows. What an experience, you know, a great, great time. Amazing music. Sucks when you find out that there's no Santa Claus, you know what I mean? You know, that like the fucking Grateful Dead was tied to the CIA. Jeez, seriously? I'm sorry to break it to you, but that's just kind of how it is. That's how it is when the social controllers get involved and, they do these things. Here's a quote from a guy named L. Wolf. As Tavistock's researchers showed, it was important that the victims of mass brainwashing not be aware that their environment was being controlled. There should thus be a vast number of sources for information whose message could be varied slightly so as to mask the sense of external control. Very important point. Very important point. When you're amplifying the message, it's important that the message is off by just a little bit, have some variations to give it the sense that it's organic. If you hear it coming from one person and then you hear it coming from another person that's totally disconnected from the first person, but the message sounds exactly the same, that can kind of trigger in your head like, uh-oh, this might be an op. You know, this might be a psychological operation that they're running. The message is a little too consistent. Where I saw this most recently was in the Event 201 summary about the pandemic that Bill Gates was simulating for Wuhan and back in October of 2019, when in that summary, they said that this will last 18 months. And then when I start hearing the politicians talking about it, they said, you guys should all expect this to last 18 months. That's when I go, ding, 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 ding. Okay, hang on a second. They're reading off the same script. There's something going on here. So this, the fact, so for the message to be slightly varied, very important, if you're running a professional operation, because that way it doesn't give that true echo effect where it just seems like you're hearing it the exact same way multiple times from different people. That'll, you know, if you're sensitive to those sorts of things, that'll set off your radar that there might be something not exactly natural and organic about this particular event. So that's just something to consider. Let's take a quick break so that we can hear from the sponsors that make this show possible, like Delete Me. The tech giants make a fortune selling your personal information to all kinds of outlets for them to use as they please. Delete Me removes your personal information like name, address, age, phone number, email address, and photos of your home from leading data broker sites. Removing personal information from data broker websites reduces your online footprint and removes Google search results. These guys really understand opt-out and privacy policies, so you don't have to spend your time focusing on things like legal jargon. Delete Me has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, NPR, and CNET. And with over 20 million personal listings removed, DeleteMe is the most trusted and proven privacy solution available. So check them out by using the link in the description to see just how they can take back your personal information. And Fiverr is an outstanding resource. If you need somebody to outsource some of your work to, or you just need specialized help with a project that you're working on, you need to check out Fiverr. They have a network of thousands of freelance experts in business, design, programming and tech, digital marketing, music and audio, video and animation, writing and translation, and so much more. Need someone to build out a website or help you grow your current business with a digital marketing campaign? You can find thousands of people ready to get to work on your project at a fixed price that you set at Fiverr. Your payment's only released to the freelancer once you're pleased and approve the work you've received. If you have questions, you can call Fiverr 24/7. Just click the link in the box in the description. Start putting this army of freelancers to work for you. And cash advance. We are living through a very strange time filled with an unbelievable amount of uncertainty. We don't know what the world's going to look like weeks from now, let alone months from now. If you find yourself in a financial emergency and in need of money right away, you at least have an option with cash advance. You can submit your request online and receive an answer in minutes so that you will know where you stand and what programs they have available for you. Their online service is entirely free and works to find potential lenders in their network. So just fill out the secure online form and see which option works best for you. Look, I hope you don't need this service, but if you do during this crazy time in our lives, at least you know that you have another option with Cash Advance. Click the link in the description box to see what they have to offer. And with all of these sponsors, your support for them directly impacts and supports the show. We certainly do appreciate that. Now let's get back to the show. And what goes well with propaganda, if you can make it work this way, if you're a propagandist, if you get a dose of fake news propaganda, real news, the truth, and incorporate in fear and a push for self-censorship, then you get a perfect storm for delivering your message. Add in a little bit of societal pressure to that, and you've got a dangerous combination. Let me read you something that Dan Rather said in 2001. He said, "There was a time in South Africa that people would put flaming tires around people's necks if they dissented. And in some ways, the fear is that you will be necklaced here. You will have a flaming tire of lack of patriotism put around your neck. Now, it is that fear that keeps journalists from asking the toughest of the tough questions. And again, I am humbled to say I do not exempt myself from this criticism. What we are talking about here, whether one wants to recognize it or not, or call it by its proper name or not, is a form of self-censorship." So Dan Rather talked about that. That was late 2001. And what he was referencing was the Afghanistan invasion. And if you remember that time, it was nothing but pickup trucks and American flags and country music and love it or leave it and America and all that stuff. And if you so much as came out and said, "Hey, why are we going into Afghanistan? The Afghanis didn't do anything to us." Boy, there was some serious repercussions for you from your friends and family. And if you were in the media, if you were Bill Maher, who had a show Politically Incorrect, he got thrown off the air for criticizing it, for questioning it, for questioning it. I mean, it wasn't even really being what he said was, someone came on his show and said, those hijackers were cowards for doing what they're doing. And Bill Maher said, "Well, technically, if you think you're going to go and die for what you believe in, it doesn't make you a coward. It actually makes you quite brave to do something like that." And they threw him off the air for that, just for challenging that. But that's propaganda. Okay. Not what Bill Maher said, but the reaction to Bill Maher. That is a propagandized audience. that rises up against something like that and says, how dare you? How dare you say that? You're opening us to attack by being for your lack of patriotism. Yeah, you know, like Goebbels said, it's easy to bring the people of a country to war, right? Just denounce them for their lack of patriotism and for opening up the homeland to potential attacks. And then you just let society take care of them. And that's exactly what happened. So, you know, nothing changes. This is, you know, what they did to Bill Maher, the Dixie Chicks or whatever for the Afghanistan and Iraq wars. They'll do to you for coronavirus. If you're somebody that steps up and goes, you know what, I'm not really buying all these numbers. These numbers look fishy to me, or I don't believe that, you know, I got friends in New York. They're telling me that the hospitals are empty. Oh, how dare you? You're going to open us up. We're all going to get it from you. We're all going to die. You know, this isn't accidental. They know how this works. The people that the social engineers that are controlling this whole thing, that are putting this propaganda out there, they know exactly how it works. They know how the lies will be interpreted. They know a certain percentage won't believe it, but it doesn't even really matter because the larger majority of people will take care of that problem for you by shaming them or beating them up. Remember when after 9/11, there were a bunch of people were going around beating up Sikhs? It's like, because they had turbans. You're like, you fucking retards. They're not even the right religion, you dummies. You know, before you go out and act like a racist asshole, get your religion straight before you start beating up Indians instead of, you know, whatever. But that's mob mentality. And that's how this stuff works. So it'll be reinforced by the crowd, by society. And they know this. And this is why Tavistock, you know, when you talk about how it's controlled, you know, and how it's put together, that it is using scientific, you know, they're bringing in scientists for it. It's, you know, they're bringing in psychologists for it because it's about psychology. And that's how, you know, and propaganda is about the psychology of words. It's about how they can be used, how the public will interpret them, and what the actions will be from that point going forward. And there's interesting studies that show, you know, once you believe something fully, it's difficult to get somebody to unbelieve that. Even when you start to show them evidence, it's like a race for your mind. Whoever can get there first and plant that flag, the first story flag, wins. You know, that story gets in there and then everything else is settled, you know, saddled with the responsibility of knocking that off, right? It's got to knock that story off because that story is the first story you hear. Hey, 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's the story, right? You have to come up with the truth has to expose and be a better story, or at least a different story than that. And even when you bring all your facts, it doesn't even matter because that first story is stuck in people's head. And that's the power of propaganda. And to quote the great George Carlin, I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. And once again, George Carlin is absolutely, totally right, because the government is in charge of propaganda. We talked about this with Operation Mockingbird, the CIA infiltrating the news desks of all of the major television networks, all of the major newspapers, all of the major magazines, all of this, a lot of the smaller ones too. You might think that they don't have a real interest in being involved in, you know, San Diego's market, but they do. They've got it. There's CIA guys in there. Some of them are CIA friendly. Some of them are outright agents. Some of them would consider themselves to be assets, which is to say they maybe don't have a direct role. Maybe they're not getting a paycheck from the CIA, but they certainly have been shown. They've been shown as people that are sympathetic to the CIA, and they will, you know, do what they ask them to do in exchange for a variety of things: prominence, you know, push, sometimes money, sometimes you know, putting them on certain councils and adding them to Council on Foreign Relations, or adding them to the Bilderberg Group, or putting them, you know, in charge of, you know, inviting them to Davos for, you know, to be a part of the World Economic Forum and things like that, the Rockefeller Foundation, get them involved in the United Nations and UNESCO and all these think tanks and the Atlantic Council and German Marshall Fund, and, you know, think tanks and NGOs that are out there working on manipulating society and manipulating the way that people view the world in order to push them towards whatever the objective is. And in most cases, the objective is pushed towards a one world government. That gets you into the whole New World Order thing that we've already talked about in one of the first episodes. But it's used, the propaganda tools, the NGOs, the councils, they're all there to support one another and keep pushing and repeating. Talk about, you know, variations in the message being essential. That's part of it. Having the message come from a variety of different sources. So if it comes from, oh, I just got this thing from, you know, from Foreign Policy Magazine, you're like, oh, well, that's a globalist think tank organization. You read an article there. Oh, I just saw it. You know, this came out on Bloomberg Media. Well, you can't trust them either. Oh, I saw I read this in Time Magazine. Oh, yeah. Isn't Richard Stengel the editor-in-chief? Yeah. So you hear the same story, but it comes from four different places, and you think, well, it must be true. It must be true if I'm hearing it from four different outlets, until you realize that it's really coming from, it's generated from one particular source. A lot of times that source is Council on Foreign Relations with regard to propaganda. And then that's put out through all their members. And those members are either reporters or editors of a lot of these major media organizations. And then they go out, they leave their meetings at the Council on Foreign Relations, they go back to work, and they put that agenda out. They start to push that story. They start to push these particular writers. Oh, this is a guy that's loyal to us. We'll have him. Let's have Max Boot write the article on it. Sure. You know, Max Boot, Project for a New American Century, scumbag extraordinaire writer that never met a war he didn't love, Israel Firster. Yeah, you know, that guy. Let's have him write a story about it. You know, let's have Maggie Haberman tweet out about this and write a story about it. You know, the reporter that was in the Clinton emails saying, oh, let's get leak the story to Maggie Haberman. She's good. She's one of us. She'll take care of it. And she's a good team player. You know, people like that. Journalists like that. That make a living being suck-ups and ball scratchers to the establishment in order to get ahead. Guys like Chris Hayes, you know, guys like Anderson Cooper, you know, these are the people. So when you hear it come from a variety of different outlets, it gives the impression that it's actual news. It gives the impression that it's so obviously a real story that everybody's picking up on it. I mean, everybody that's digging into it is coming up with the same story, the same answers on this thing. So it must be true. That's a very, very effective tool for creating and shaping and creating like a fake reality. When everybody's talking about something, then it must be something, right? But if you look back to how David Icke frames this, he says, how do you know when it's the agenda? When it's nowhere, and then all of a sudden, it's everywhere. So think about some of the propaganda, some of the agendas that you see. How about the trans rights agenda? Wasn't a big thing. Trans people have existed for a long, long time. They've been treated pretty poorly by a lot of people, forced into, you know, feeling like they have to only work in the sex industry and things like, I mean, it's got to be rough. I don't envy them for the shit they have to deal with. But then all of a sudden, it was just transgender reading hour at the local library, everywhere, in multiple continents. And, you know, a push for, you know, there's got to be a third bathroom. There's got to be a third bathroom and all that stuff. You're like, whoa, 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 wait a second. Okay, let's talk this out. Well, you can't talk it out. It's like weaponized, you know. How dare you? You don't want third, you're homophobic, you're transphobic. I'm going to get you deplatformed off Twitter. I'm going to get you kicked out off of Facebook. I'm going to get you fired from your job. You're like, wait a second. Like, Can't you sniff the agenda there? And I'm not saying that trans people don't deserve rights. I'm not saying that at all. They absolutely do. They don't deserve a special parking space. They don't deserve a holiday. They deserve to be treated like everybody else, like normal people. They don't deserve a third bathroom. I mean, but that's the agenda. And that's it. That's just a kind of a more recent example of how do you know when it's the agenda, when it's nowhere, and then all of a sudden it's everywhere. And that's how this stuff plays out. So who would know how this works better than Edward Bernays? He wrote a book called Propaganda. He said, "The conscience and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of. This is a logical result of the way in which our democratic society is organized. Vast numbers of human beings must cooperate in this manner if they are to live together as a smoothly functioning society. In almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or our ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind." Some of the media assets and organizations that participated in Operation Mockingbird included ABC, NBC, CBS, Time, Newsweek, the Associated Press, United Press International, Reuters, Hearst Newspapers, Scripps Howard, Copley News Service, and 400 journalists who have secretly carried out assignments according to documents on file at CIA headquarters, from intelligence gathering to serving as go-betweens. So the CIA had infiltrated the nation's business, media, and university with tens of thousands of on-call operatives by the 1950s. Think about that for a little while. That's like three quarters of a century ago, you know, just about. We've been lied to about everything. That's why people are telling you, like, don't believe your nightly news. Don't believe the mainstream media. But I like, you know, I like Lester Holt. I mean, that, fine. Maybe Lester Holt's a good guy. Like, maybe, you know, you'd want to go out and have a Caesar salad with him or something. I don't know. But don't listen to him. You know, like, when he's doing his news broadcast, like, don't pretend that what he's telling you is the truth. And it's not to put it all on poor Lester Holt, because he, I mean, he does seem like a decent guy. I'm not trying to shit on him too much, but he works for an organization that has a long history of lying their asses off to the American public. So it's not as if he's, you know, he might be a good guy, or, you know, your favorite news anchor might be a good guy, but they work for organizations and they have bosses that are, that have an agenda, and the agenda is propaganda. Bernays goes on to have this great one-liner: propaganda is the executive arm of the invisible government. Yeah. Well, you know, the Operation Mockingbird has been, you know, it had been in effect for years and years, 40, 50 plus years, that it was well in operation before a lot of people figured out what was happening there. And So I think the mockingbird media has been replaced with news parrots, right? Like a group of repeaters that get paid a whole lot of money to read someone else's words from a teleprompter on the nightly news, you know, regardless of whether the stories are true or if they actually believe them or not. So it's like, you know, the mockingbird media was really those first guys, you know, the first batch of journalists in the 60s that were Walter Cronkite and guys like that, that were, they were actual journalists going out and reporting. And then they were also reading the news as well. But this new batch, I rename them as news parrots because they're not actually out there. They're not real journalists. They're not breaking news. And so they're just reading. They go in the morning, sit through a briefing from their boss. Then they get put in hair and makeup. Then they go over what they're reading for the night, sit down with their producer, talk about, you know, we're going to go do this, this, this. Then they have their earpiece in, they're controlled the whole way. Then they read the news and then they go home to their mansion. They're not out there like, oh, okay, just one more question for this, you know, person. What was the assailant wearing? You know, like there's none of that stuff. There's no actual journalism going on. They're just readers. And for that, they are paid a damn fortune. And I hope it's worth it because they have sold their soul and integrity out in order to get that job. But it's not limited to media members that are utterly full of shit. It's the people running the countries as well. So let's play a little game. I'm going to read an excerpt from a speech, and then you get to figure out if it was Stephen Harper from Canada who said it, or if it was John Howard from Australia who said it. Okay. And the speech goes like this. And this is March of 2003. And this is talking about the run up to the Iraq war. It is inherently dangerous to allow a country such as Iraq to retain weapons of mass destruction, particularly in light of its past aggressive behavior. If the world community fails to disarm Iraq, we fear that other rogue states will be encouraged to believe that they too can have these most deadly of weapons to systematically defy international resolutions, and that the world will do nothing to stop them. All right. So place your bets. Stephen Harper of Canada or John Howard of Australia? Are you ready for the answer? The answer is they both gave that speech. Word for word. They read the same speech 3 days apart. Not a variation. They are reading the same speech in front of their parliaments for the push to go to war with Saddam Hussein for weapons of mass destruction, which we know is a lie. Propaganda is used against us all the time. Naraya, in the lead up to the first Gulf War, they were taking the babies out of the incubator and putting them on the cold floor to die. Total fabrication. 100% lie. Coached by Hill and Knowlton, PR firm, daughter of the Iraqi ambassador, or the Kuwaiti ambassador, I should say, admitted to. Now, once again, not a debatable topic. You can go look it up. It's a fact. As Bill Hicks says, it's a fact. You can look it up. I can't be this big of an asshole without having the facts on my side. Propaganda is used all the time. When, don't take my word for it. Take William Casey, CIA director, who said this in February of 1981. We'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false. Well, shit, William, you ought to give yourself a gold star because I think you successfully achieved your goal because everything the American public believes is false. We're a bunch of idiots. I mean, we really have to do a better job of making sure that the information that we put into our brains is as accurate as possible. And we are severely lacking in that discipline. There's just a whole lot of people that will believe whatever they're told. Smart people too. It's interesting to study the psychology of why that happens, but I'm sure Tavistock knows the answer to that, obviously. But this is, you've got the director of the CIA telling you, you know, that their goal is to make sure that everything we believe is false. Why don't we break up the CIA? I mean, I know JFK was planning on doing that. Probably. I wonder if Bill Casey drove home from night, you know, from work at night with like a big smile on his face because he knew that he had just spent another productive day concocting a bunch of bullshit stories to jam down the throats of unsuspecting Americans. I wonder if he like went home and his wife was like, good, how was work today, Bill? He's like, oh man, it was great. Well, I told him all about this Russia scare and those big dummies. They all believed it. Oh, good, honey. You're so smart. Good for you. I don't think it ended very well for Bill Casey, if memory serves. And, you know, from Bill Casey to Adolf Hitler, quite a bit in common, I would say. Hitler said this, in relation to the political decontamination of our public lives, the government will embark upon a systematic campaign to restore the nation's morale and material health. The whole education system, theater, film, literature, the press and broadcasting, all of these will be used as a means to this end. So, Hitler knew a little something about, you know, using a variety of industries to shape reality. He's talking about here, education system, theater, film, literature, press, broadcasting. They'll be used to shape the reality to, you know, to restore the nation's moral health. That's a nice way of saying it. You know, the military-industrial complex does this. They are in conjunction with the media components. They describe, they like to take this where you retake, you know, a mostly truth and then throw a little bit of lies in there. That's called, you know, well, that's called your nightly news, but it's also called a limited hangout. And what a limited hangout is when you give, when you like confess, let's say you're a criminal and you get arrested for robbery and murder, right? And what you, they'd take you down to the police station, talk about, you know, this lady was robbed, and she was beaten to death. And this guy says, well, listen, okay, fine. They say, we have witnesses that put you at the scene. He says, all right, well, it's true. I did steal what was in her purse, but she was already beaten to death. Somebody else beat her to death. It wasn't me. So you confess to like the lesser of the crimes, but not the big one, in hopes that people will, you voluntarily confess to it in hopes that people will see that act as being like, well, you wouldn't confess to this. You know, if you'd done it all, you wouldn't confess to any of it. So clearly, if you're confessing to the robbery part, you wouldn't confess to the robbery part if you actually had murdered her too, because that's just too close, you know? So it buys you a little bit of, you know, you save face a little bit, but you also take a little bit of the heat off of yourself by confessing to like a lesser known, lesser important crime, you know, less important crime, I should say. And you see that a lot in the mainstream media. You see that they use that all the time. In fact, George Orwell said he said, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable and to give an appearance of solidity to pure wind. And what we have is we have the media talking about particular events. They have people like, as an example, the media will run a story about they'll never run a story about Big Pharma's role in vaccine damage, right? But they will run a story about Big Pharma getting sued for Vioxx and being on the hook for multiple billions of dollars in claims. And they'll run that story knowing that the verdict has just come down and it's going to be out there. So they won't bury everything necessarily. If something's been made public, if it's something public, there's no sense diffusing a bomb after it's already gone off. You know what I mean? So they'll talk about the Vioxx thing, which paints Big Pharma in a bad light, obviously. But they won't go the next step and talk about the vaccine thing, you know, because and so by criticizing Big Pharma about how they lost this gigantic lawsuit and Vioxx was dangerous and killed all these people and it screwed up a bunch more people, and they had to pay out billions of dollars in it, they give the appearance that they're holding Big Pharma in check, like they're holding them accountable. Like, oh, look at them taking, you know, Big Pharma to town for all their, you know, these medicines that they've made that hurt people. And you're like, yeah, they're getting them, right? But they're not really. They're not taking them the next step. And because the next step would be like, well, let's talk about these vaccines as well. And that's not going to happen because they're still selling the vaccines. They're not still selling Vioxx. So Zbigniew Brzezinski, former national security advisor and father of Minka Brzezinski on Morning Joe. We have a large public that is very ignorant about public affairs and very susceptible to simplistic slogans by candidates who appear out of nowhere, have no track record, but mouth appealing slogans. You mean like Obama? I mean, if there ever was a textbook example of that, he's right, though. He's right about those campaign slogans, right? They sort of come out of nowhere and they stick in your head and they're written by some very smart marketing guys. So, yes, we can make America great again. As long as we don't stop thinking about tomorrow. We'll be stronger together because if we have hope and put country first, then we will indeed have change we can believe in. You know, it's all that stuff. It's all platitudes and dog shit. It's just words read off of a teleprompter with some authority by these politicians. Well, maybe not Joe Biden. Joe Biden can't read. One thing that has been exposed in the 2020 elections is that Joe Biden can't read, or at least he can't speak. But that's a topic for a different episode. So we'll end with a quote from Dr. Udo Ulfkalte, a German journalist and editor. And he said something really important, and I think it's important that people realize that comments like this matter, and people in the industry pay attention to this, because the guy that said this, Dr. Udo, he wound up dead not too long after he said this quote, and it goes like this. I've been a journalist for about 25 years, and I was educated to lie, to betray, and not to tell the truth to the public. But seeing right now, within the last months, how the German and American media tries to bring war to the people in Europe, to bring war to Russia, this is a point of no return. And I'm going to stand up and say it is not right what I have done in the past to manipulate people, to make propaganda against Russia. And it is not right what my colleagues do and have done in the past because they are bribed to betray the people, not only in Germany, but all over Europe. And I would say, to piggyback off that, all over the United States as well. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with your friends and family. Get the word out there, please. And connect with me on the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. Take care.